Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are just wrapping up. Actually, we just, let me see here. Which amendment was that? Well, they used the Roman numerals. So it was 24 that we're heading into, and we just wrapped up 23. And so if we're going to get into this, I've got to go through some basic monologue obligatory. So let me just go ahead and dispose of those right now. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. Now, for those of you, because I haven't said this in a long time, for those of you who have tried to go to RepublicReview.org, you will notice that that domain is not up or operating. But the purpose of that domain is not for us to own it, because if you understand Republic Review, it is not to be owned and or operated by a private entity and or a private person or what have you. The intent is to transition or actually give this to the body of the states so that the states can have a central point in organizing, you know, what they've collectively agreed upon in moving forward regarding handling the audit and getting the federal government in compliance. So I recognized a long time ago that this is not my organization. The Republic Review is not going to be done by me. And it won't be done by one person. It will be done by the state legislatures per the Constitution's design. The state legislatures are the ones who have the authority to step in and actually dictate what the federal government needs to do in getting themselves corrected when they have created what we call variances, or when they start operating outside the boundaries. They start violating the Constitution. So anyway, I just want you to understand that RepublicReview.org will be eventually transitioned over. Well, hopefully we actually get to that point where we actually are in the process where the states are starting to work together and moving forward and holding the federal government accountable and getting them into compliance. So there you go. In addition, you are listening to the only show that provides academic, evidence-based solutions. Folks, I know that I could probably try to be entertaining. It's not about being entertaining, and it's not about being entertained, hopefully, for you. I hope that you find the value and the merit in learning and understanding just basically what the Constitution actually says and then what those means, what those words and clauses actually mean. So forgive me. Anyway, so the whole point here is that if you want to be entertained, there's a huge market out there that, it, you know, there's, these people are willing to entertain you. If you're looking to kick butt, if you're looking to start going after, you know, bad politicians, government that is overreaching its boundaries within the Constitution, then this is the place to come. If you're looking for fixing the problem, this is the show, the radio station. Hopefully, eventually, it may become that radio station where more and more of the hosts start actually understanding Republic Review and become not only supporters, but ardent supporters and helping propagate the message. Bottom line is, we would love it if you would call your favorite entertainer, I don't care, Rush, Glenn Beck, Mark Levin, I don't care, and ask them, hey, how come you guys aren't getting behind Republic Review? Some of these guys have already committed to the Convention of States. And to me, that's the biggest mistake they could have made. Clearly. And As I tell people, or as I'm in the process of poking people like John Birchers in the eye, that are now there are really good, great John Birchers, and technically the organization's a decent organization when it comes down to trying to stay focused on teaching. But when they start telling you about something that they refuse to actually and honestly address, like Republic Review, and tell you that it's a pathway to the Article 5 Convention, then they're being deceptive, and there's a reason for that. And that is a management decision. That is not, because there are lots of people in the John Birch ranks that have actually, on their own, have analyzed Republic Review. They scratch their head and go, I have no idea what the John Birch Society is doing, stating these things. They should be behind these things. But anyway, the point is that I like to, and it's not that I find pleasure in poking people in the eye. It's just that I like to point out that if, because this isn't about me, if everybody united on this and this started moving in its own volition, technically, if you've listened to me over the course of time, I would love to start backing out more as the states start getting involved and everybody starts basically uniting on the audit and demanding full compliance to the Constitution. It will allow me to back out, and then I can actually start writing and articulating how we can save and let's use the words reimagine education. Let's use the words reimagine social and compassionate services and how we can get government completely out of things it has no business being involved in. This is one of the reasons why we go through the cod bounty or the cod fishery bounties that Madison basically schools Congress on, why the general welfare or the general defense and welfare clause is not intended to provide financial or any form of welfare. It is just a basic preamble to the enumerated powers. And so, anyway, as you know, this is the show that we actually do give you the evidence. And what we want you to do is, instead of taking our word for it, get smart on this. We want you to become the advocate for the Constitution, just as James Madison was. It's not mine. It's not his. It's not yours. It's ours. It's our Constitution that we should be helping others illuminate the truth, the reality, and what these things really mean. So what we're going to do is, once we get through, just giving you a kind of a glimpse down the road, once we get through this, we'll get back onto the standard, you know, every 6 months type of content, and we're going to be peppering like I always do. We'll be injecting, and especially between now and the election, we'll probably have more marketing than content, just so that we can kind of address the issues and stay apprised of, I hate to call it, the carnage of the train wreck. But bottom line, there are people out there that are so fixated that they want to see, they want to know. So we have to dabble in the news cycle. So we will be dabbling in the news cycle, but I'm here to tell you, and anybody that listens while we talk about the news cycle, as you watch one train car after another compress the one in front in this train wreck, it's going to consume all of your time. It's going to consume the opportunity cost that we have in actually engaging in the solution. Are you being productive watching and getting caught up in the news cycle? Or are you being productive in, you know, rolling up your sleeves, learning first what the Constitution really is, how limited it is, what the government is doing that are violations, and then helping other people understand that? It's kind of like, this is a good friend of mine, Douglas V. Gibbs. He's the president and founder of the Constitution Association. Told me a long time ago, he considers himself an evangelical, or a minister of the truth of the Constitution. And it's like a ministry. And so one of the things that you, as you start looking, you can actually kind of look at all of these constitutional organizations, including the John Birch Society and the rest of them that try to teach you about that. Look at them in context of being a ministry. Look at them in context of being, you know, somebody that is preaching to you. And the question is, how genuine are they? Because are they really teaching you the truth about the Constitution, or are they just giving you the information you need, but they're not giving you the tangible solutions and or important points like Section 3 of the 14th Amendment or the subsection 15 of Article 1, Section 8, where Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia. So as we start going through these things, you should actually, and you don't have to cite it like scripture and verse. And I know people's eyes roll in their head when they hear people start citing scriptures or being able to, you know, call out these things. These things should become very simple. As a matter of fact, the Constitution is nothing like the Bible. It's Article 1, Article 2. Article 1 is over legislation and the powers enumerated to the federal government. Article 2 is regarding the president and his responsibilities. Article 3 is the judiciary. Article 4 are some of the general powers and the general position of the federal government. And Article 5 is the process, the amendment process. And Article 6 is basically where the supremacy and some other restrictions regarding the Constitution. And then Article 7 is the ratification. It's really simple. I mean, you can't go through all the books of the Bible like that, but the Constitution is a lot easier. I'm saying it is easier to understand and to basically regurgitate that stuff. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so we're going to get back into the Constitution, and we're going to jump back into the 23rd Amendment because we just kind of covered that. And I think it's important that we... What's the best way of saying this? So there are some things, unless you really examine them, you'll miss how they become contrary to the Constitution itself, even the amendments. And this is why in the 17th Amendment, I pointed out that the 17th Amendment creates a contradiction with Article 5. because the 17th Amendment changes whether a state can have suffrage, equal suffrage in the Senate or not. And so with that, what we find out is the 17th Amendment did not change Article 5, so the protection clause, or the amendment protection clause at the very end of Article 5, is in play still, that states cannot lose their suffrage because the amendment had no intention in changing that. And this is the problem when we allow, I'll just say, idiots write amendments to the Constitution and they don't understand all the little hooks that they have to fix or they have to make modifications to. And that's why when you look at the 12th Amendment, the 12th Amendment was very well done. That was because it was done by the framers. Why was it well done? Because it clarified and addressed all of the parts that required changing to the Constitution and didn't create a conflict when they actually made some changes, unlike the 17th Amendment and the 23rd. Also, it's my responsibility to try to remind you to keep on pondering and where you are, and hopefully you're coming up with answers to this. Are you pondering your role and responsibility as a U.S. citizen in utilizing your First Amendment right of petition? Have you understood, or are you in the process of learning more about the importance of using common law grand juries at the county level in declaring and clarifying what is constitutional and how laws and certain things are violations of the Constitution? And then more importantly, are you beginning to recognize that, yes, you have a responsibility in being a part of the national security? You are in one of the two different militias. You're either in the organized militia where you're actively participating and or a part of the unorganized. Now, when I say actively participating, that doesn't mean just going to a gun range and doing familiarization fire and, you know, target practice and that type of thing. Every person, every U.S. citizen should have a firearm because every U.S. citizen is either in one or the two militias. And the more important thing to understand is that you are the safeguard of tyranny. With all of a sudden, the militia starts actually enforcing tyrannical laws, it is the unorganized militia that is their counterweight or their check and balance on whether they are being correct in their enforcement of a law. This is why when we look at the checks and balances in so many different ways and in so many different directions, the Constitution, it's brilliant. I mean, who else could have created this type of a document? I mean, the framers mentioned checks and balances, but I don't think they mentioned and or understand the importance of that. And one of the things that kind of came up, I don't want to get into the news cycle. It constantly comes up, though, that people are basically asserting, like Durbin this week, in saying that, you know, a person only needs a muzzle. They don't need a military type of gun. That, you know, regarding the Second Amendment, he's an idiot. He doesn't understand that the purpose of the Second Amendment is not to go hunt. The purpose of the Second Amendment is very clear. And this is why in the Second Amendment, it actually, it actually sets the stage for what it is really addressing and ensuring that there is this understanding what the right to bear arms is all about, because it's all about a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So what does that have to do with hunting? Does he just think that the right to bear arms, those are the only words in the Second Amendment? Does he completely white out, and does he completely, you know, lose track or have this, you know, erasure in his head that the Constitution clearly dictates that the militia is responsible for our internal national security, not the federal government? Well, I mean, the federal government, in a way, they should have the power to call forth, but they don't have the power or ability within the Constitution to create their own enforcement agencies. Anyway, with that, I want to keep your eye on the prize. I want you to keep thinking about your role, responsibility, and power. As you know, one of the things I don't do when we get into content too often, but I think I've got a little time now, please let other people know that there is a solution, that, you know, and obviously there's no, you got to start telling people and you got to start educating people. There is no 90 second pitch, you know, elevator speech. There is no such thing as an elevator speech in what it takes to save this Constitution. And to get into all of the details, it takes some time. So you have to kind of help and coach these people that are, you know, just new to receiving the message. You need to help them understand that, give it some time, have some patience, because there is no 90-second speech. Now, you can point them to the information, the content, right there on our homepage on reclaimingtherepublic.org, or the constitutional articles. And the top three articles that we have on that are the closest thing we can give somebody that would be a 90-second elevator speech, but it's more like probably an hour and a half. And it's not really, I mean, I think the human being can probably read through, what is that, 9 pages total? You could probably do that, well, easily, less than an hour. But to understand it, some people have to read it slowly or they have to read it multiple times. So if you're starting to understand that, you know, what is this and how, because they don't understand the Constitution. So that's why it's so difficult to even come up with a 90-second elevator speech. But everybody today has to have it pithy. They get, you know, give it to me right now. What's the brass tacks? 5 seconds or less, 10 words. Anyway, it's not that easy, folks. But I do appreciate, and we have been getting bumped up in our ratings and streaming and so forth. So please keep on the good work in getting the word out. And we want to thank you again for taking the time out to actually absorb the content and the message, because going through the Constitution, it took over a week to go through that. So anybody that thinks they can get immediate satisfaction and the immediate message and complete understanding, I'm sorry, it's going to take you some time. But to anybody that has a fundamental understanding of the Constitution, these things should start clicking in your brain, that the Constitution's a compact. It's not some noble guide of governments or some archaic way of doing something that we don't do anymore. No, it is a compact that the states have basically signed in their lifeblood. If states actually had a soul, if states had a life, it is marked, and the Constitution is engraved on that soul. States are perpetual. They're not like human beings that die, just like corporations. Typically, look at some of the corporations that were founded in the 1800s, and they're still operating like Dow, such as Procter & Gamble. There are corporations that have been around for well over a century. How is that? Because they're perpetual, just like a state, just like government. And so how the Constitution was acknowledged, received, and to be operated is also a perpetual understanding. The problem is that the states never did a good job in sharing the ratification base, the terms and definitions. The original states just basically put those things there, and they allowed the federal government to make it up as they go along. They're like a bunch of kids, and they're getting away with murder, literally. Literally getting away with murder. So anyway, let's just move forward. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to kind of recover the 23rd Amendment. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint in such manner as the Congress may direct. And the reason I'm rereading this is because I want you to understand that electors, to be clear, electors are assigned to state representation, the electors of the president. And so what Congress did, this is a progressive amendment proposed in 1960, ratified in 61. A number of electors of president and vice president equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but in no event more than the least populous state, they should be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall not be considered for the purpose of the election of president and vice president to be electors appointed by the state, and they shall, so let me read that again, they shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered, not considered, they shall be considered for the purpose of the election of the president and vice president. So in other words, what they just did is they actually threw in three more electoral college votes for the progressives, because everybody understands that D.C. is all about big government and they want the best big government president possible to help aggrandize everything that they're doing. So we've got a hard break. I'm going to finish this so that you can understand how this is actually a violation. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what I just said is basically the 23rd Amendment gives the District of Columbia electors without being a state. Now, and I can read it again, but I think you just go back, if you get to the recording, just pull down this podcast, today's show, write today's show down, because it's an important one, because we're talking about the Electoral College. And here they're injecting the premise that D.C. is entitled to an Electoral College. And over here in the 12th Amendment, I'm going to read the wording to you, and it's just the very first sentence. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct. In other words, if you have to have a state legislature, a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress. Now, we have read through this and read through this in the ratification debates. The District of Columbia was to be an autonomous zone because it was not to be under the power of any state. And now D.C. wants to break away from this fundamental premise of what the seat of the national government is, and it wants to have this little role of becoming a state. Well, if that's the case, seriously, if that's the case, then the District of Columbia needs to be wiped out and the land needs to be divided back to Washington, or the northern side of Washington, D.C. is given back to the state of Maryland, and the southern part is given back to, and all those people living within the District of Columbia and all land being utilized in private and or in business purposes, private businesses, not the government, are now subject to property tax that is going to be based on Virginia and Maryland. And the mayor of Washington, D.C. would basically, there would be two mayors. There would be the northern city and then the southern city. And those mayors would be subject to Maryland law and Virginia law. And they would know, and as a matter of fact, to do this, we would also need to wipe out the exclusive legislation for the seat of government. See, when you start walking down this path of creating District of Columbia, an actual constitutional state, they've got to make a lot of changes, and they're nowhere close to doing this, and they're trying to have their bread buttered on every side. Well, how many sides are there? There's six, right? And so we have to stop. We have to step up and start awakening people, because the next step for the District of Columbia is to try to become a state. And that's what they're working on. And the concept that the seat of government becoming a state is repugnant to the founding of this nation, because the federal government was not to be under the rule and under the auspices, under the cognizance of a state government. They were to have anonymity and autonomy. Anyway, as we move forward, and obviously it says Congress shall have the appropriate power to enforce this. So anyway, let me kind of dive forward into Article 24, proposed in 1962 and ratified in 1964. The right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or for vice president, or for senator or representative in Congress shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or in any state for reason of failure to pay any poll tax. So this amendment goes after the states that had poll taxes, where you had to basically pay because they felt that voters were being disenfranchised. Now, I truly believe that, you know, we don't have to have poll taxes. But I also believe that a voter does not have a right and or a privilege in voting in an issue such as bonds on property tax if you do not have property. In other words, if you're not allowed to vote for your representation in a state you don't reside because you're not entitled to representation, why is it that we allow people to vote in issues that they have no skin in the game? I'm just quoting Obama here. We've got skin in the game, you should be able to do. And absolutely, we need to start looking at voting the same way corporations do with stockholders and so forth. Just because you own stock in Ford, Chevrolet, or what have you, doesn't mean you're entitled to vote in all other car manufacturing stocks out there. You have to have skin in the game to be able to vote on governance. And so states need to come down the path of cleaning up. And as a matter of fact, this becomes another brilliant idea, because I've actually had this. I hate to say brilliant because I'm not patting myself on the back, but this needs to become a actual legislation that we can go after and actually protect very specific things. Because what ends up happening is the renters and those people who have no skin in the game, because because somehow, some crazy way, we've started implementing democracy. Every one person, one voice, one vote in all things. No, 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 no. That's repugnant to the design of our Republican form of government. And so we need to start getting states to introducing and passing legislation that makes it impossible. If you're not the homeowner, you cannot vote on that issue. And if you vote on that issue, that's considered voter fraud, and you will be subject to. But here's the beautiful thing, and I mentioned this in my book. We have the technology today to determine whether the person is the homeowner or not, and ensuring that the ballot that goes to that resident and that person owning no property, no real property, they can't vote on any bonds, period. Let's get smart, folks. Let's quit giving away the store to those who would be happy to steal everything and destroy everything they possibly can, because they're entitled. And that's how they're being taught. That's how they're being indoctrinated. You're entitled to have this. You're entitled to have that. Come on, let's get real. And as a matter of fact, that kind of goes down to that conversation of who moved my cheese and so forth. Anyway, this is another amendment where Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation, but not by physical exertion. The exertion of enforcement is to be done by the militia, as the Constitution clearly spells out. Article 25. Now, as you notice, they call the amendments, they don't call them the 12th and the 15th. And so all of us that refer to them by the 10th, 12th, and so forth, they're actually by article number. Anyway, Article 25, proposed in 1965, ratified in 1967. This is probably the Civil Rights Act, right? In case of the removal of the president from office or his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the vice president, the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. So all you need is a 50% plus one. And see, I kind of have a problem with that, because Congress doesn't have any say. It's the electors, different people. And as a matter of fact, if you look at Article 2 and the 12th Amendment, it's really clear that the first persons, and the electors, once you've elected who your elector is, they actually are supposed to serve until the next election. So why is it that they create this clause in this amendment to bypass the electors? What this clause should actually say is that if the president needs to nominate a vice president, the electors need to, based on a majority vote, that person can then be seated by the electors, because the electors are those who we designate to actually choose the president and the vice president. And as a matter of fact, it's very clear that electors cannot be legislatures, state legislatures, or congressional legislators. Section 3. Whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate, the vice president, and the speaker of the House of Representatives a written declaration that he is unable to discharge powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits them to them a writing declaration contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president acting as president. So the key thing here is that the president himself must transmit to the vice president which is the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House. So for this to act, section 3, to have play or force, the president actually has to write that message. Section 4. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro tempore. So this is a back door in removing the president, because they claim he's unfit for duty. So Anyway, and this right here, my friends, is a lot of people are pointing out that Biden may be the actual first president that will be a victim of this because of his incompetency. We will be right back after these two promos, so hang on.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're talking about the back door to removing a president in Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the vice president himself. So in other words, if the vice president writes their own message to themselves and to the Speaker of the House, their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Now, so let me play this out for you, friends. If you understand Pence and his integrity, he will never write that letter. Kamala Harris will. Kamala Harris is a, you got to understand, I go through this all the time, and this is why we go through the shades of liberty and or the scale of liberty so that people understand somebody that is over on the far side of subjugation, they believe that you must be forced, you must be compelled to do certain things because they know better and this is what is best for everyone. And so Kamala Harris, there's no doubt in my mind, she would believe that she would be a better president and she would use this. And I believe that Nancy Pelosi, so it's all a matter of Joe setting up basically his executive department and they will try to get that stuff done slam dunk quick. So that every single, because this is what it says, a majority of either of the principal officers, so the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of executive departments. Who are they? These are the people that the president himself picks to serve him in the Department of Defense, in the Department of Secretary, the Department of Justice, Department of State, and all the Department of Treasury, all of these different departments. Those are the executive principal officers. So in other words, there may be a huge cabal that would put Kamala Harris as president of the United States. And we are actually looking at, and they're already talking about this. Nancy's already brought this up, and people are already looking at how they can possibly do this, because everybody has acknowledged, except being open and public about it, but it's been the nod, the wink, and it's really the hoodwinking of the progressive saying, yeah, Joe's our guy until we get him in, and then we will use Section 4 of the 25th Amendment to remove him, especially if he doesn't want to, quote-unquote, play along. So at that point, the vice president shall then assume the duties acting as president. Thereafter, when the president transmits to the vice president pro tempore of the Senate, which is the vice president now acting as president, or because I don't think if all of a sudden this goes through, I don't think they remove the president. There will be no vice president. And so, and the Speaker of the House, his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of either of the principal officers of the executive department or other such body as Congress may by law provide, transmit within 4 days to the vice president and the Speaker of the House their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers of duty. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose, if not in session. Folks, this will be the biggest scandal in American politics if this trigger gets pulled. If the Congress, and going on with the 25th Amendment, the very last part of the bottom paragraph, if the Congress, within 21 days after receipt of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session, within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by two-thirds vote of both houses that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting as president. Otherwise, the president shall resume his duties. Now, I'm going to tell you, they're in no way going to let Sleepy Joe. And you know what? People say, well, you know, these guys aren't going to take a dive. I am telling you, look at the Bushes. Look at George W. George W. did things deliberately, and he moved the globalist ball down the field as a good player would do, as a good team player. And so he knew going in that the progressives were going to use him as a whipping post, and that's okay because, I mean, look, you know, it's just them against us, right? But actually, it's them against them when that's really actually them for them because they're actually supporting each other. When somebody goes into the boxing ring to take a dive, when a baseball team literally throws the World Series, you know, like the Chicago White Sox or the Black Sox, as they called them, then you actually start understanding corruption and what is in it for, you know, for somebody else. And what the heck is and why would anybody care about their integrity as long as they satisfy the necessities of what is best for everybody? When you're wired that way, I can't express this enough. When you are wired that compulsion is necessary, then people just do what they're told. And they understand that this is the way we need to go. And don't worry, I'm going to keep getting my crumbs. You know what? A great example of a person that has done that and has done that in the Republican ranks in addition to George W. Bush was John McCain. John McCain was a whipping boy for the progressives, and he was a mouthpiece for the progressives. I just recently received correspondence. He was an embarrassment for Arizona, but even more importantly, he was a huge tarnishment on the brand Republican. And I want to actually, you know, as a side movement, I think it's really important that what do you call that when you basically hijack, where you take control But we need to restore the Republican name to what Madison and Jefferson built. I am not proud of the party of Lincoln. And as a matter of fact, that is a signal to tell people that Lincoln and the Republican Party is all about big government. Anyway, the 26th Amendment, proposed in 1971 and ratified in 1971, the right of citizens of the United States who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state. So now we've got three amendments, one that allowed, actually four, one that allowed, technically, one would think that the 13th, 14th Amendment would have opened the doors for blacks to vote, but no, it didn't. So they actually had to create a new amendment. So we have one specific one to allow women, one specifically to allow people of color, and the third one here, as we see in the 26th Amendment, to allow 18-year-olds the right of suffrage. Again, if they don't own property, like I ranted previously, they should have no skin in the game. As a matter of fact, we need to start eliminating democracy in our Republican form of government. Now, this next one is inoperative. It was proposed in 1972, and it expired and unratified in 1982. This was known as the Equal Rights Amendment. Section 1, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. The Congress, Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce the appropriate legislation and the provision of this article. Section 3, this amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. The thing is that the reason why this is inoperative and dead is because they actually put a sunset clause that they required that this amendment be ratified within 10 years. They played chicken and under the auspices or under the intent and design that, oh, you know, we can pressure people to ratify this sooner instead of letting it kind of linger and say, well, let's wait on this. Let's wait on this to force them into the decision. And nobody predicted, because the progressive movement felt that they were going to actually dominate once Jimmy Carter took office. And when the progressives, because it's really funny, when I look at what Nixon did, Nixon was a front man for the progressive movement. So was Ford. And so people say, oh, well, they were, you know, really conservative. No, they weren't. And people look at Calvin Coolidge, like I proved to you, Calvin Coolidge was really not a conservative. These guys are progressives. And, oh, by the way, wink, wink, nod, nod, Ronald Reagan was a progressive too. But Ronald Reagan had conservative policies and wanted to ensure that he wasn't trying to expand government. He did make government bigger. He's the guy that actually put teeth in, you know, affirmative action, or I should say protecting the rights of, you know, all people of color and all citizens. He's the one that actually put a level of, you know, oomph to the bite of government if they came after, when they came after people for violating those types of things. But when you start looking at who are those that really were the champions of downsizing government, yeah, Reagan did cut taxes, but government did grow under him. And he basically regretted the fact that he actually allowed amnesty for all of the illegals, because he was promised by his administration that they were going to fix the problem, and they didn't. And so that becomes another tarnishment on Reagan. Folks, we will wrap this up in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley, and we'll get into marketing, and we're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue.
Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.